Okay, thanks. Welcome, everybody, to our third annual, what we call the Street Summit. And tonight we're going to go through... maybe I need to turn this thing on. There we go. Going to go through a few different topics. Going to talk a little bit about pavement management basics, the basics of street paving or pavement management 101, whatever you want to call it, the future of city street maintenance, future funding scenarios, what we're planning on doing this fall with our street maintenance program, our sidewalk program, our CDBG or community development block grant, where we get grant money for sidewalk gap closures and ADA accessibility, and then a little bit about other streets activities that the city performs. So we're going to get started right now. I think we can make it through this presentation in less than half an hour, and we can have questions after that. Or if somebody has a burning question and just needs an answer right then, just come up to the podium. We'll stop at that point and deal with that question right then. Thanks, Jim. We're not running a clock, so there's no time limit on discussion or questions. So we are going to try to complete this session in a couple of hours, though, to get everybody home by around 8 o'clock. With that, we'll kick this thing off here. Some of the goals of the city's pavement management program are to improve and maintain the city's pavement condition index, or it's kind of a grading scale on the condition of the streets. Citywide, they average 66, and to get that up to a minimum of 70. State of California has a goal to improve all of our streets and highways to an average of 70. They haven't quite figured out how to get the money to do that. And another goal is to balance pavement preservation with worst first. So we have a computer model that gives us lists of streets to maintain and tells us what to do on those. If we followed that computer model to the T, we would let streets like Ponderosa and Panorama and all those streets that are just filled with potholes decay until there's nothing left of them. So we need to strike a balance between maintaining, doing what the theoretical best thing to do is maintain the good pavement good, and letting the bad pavement go until all the life of it is gone, and trying to improve those streets that are too far gone for pavement preservation. Pavement preservation techniques are generally, well, I'll go to the next slide. So our street maintenance priorities are pavement management or street repair. On an ongoing basis through either our maintenance crews' observations or in the service requests people send in to us, we do pothole repair. ADA sidewalk repair to make sure our sidewalks are walkable and usable for all users. Tree trimming is another draw of our kind of our big pot of streets money. We also have to maintain storm drains and repair those. Roadway striping we do, sign and signal maintenance, and I should add street sweeping that we do with the streets bucket of money. Why do we do pavement preservation as a major goal of the project? As you can see here, down the vertical axis is pavement condition. This is time in years, what happens to a street after time. And then this is gives us some indication of how much life is left or what the costs are to do repairs to those streets. So maybe a dollar square foot here and up to $14 a square foot when you get down here. So it's best to keep all your pavement above that curve here. Unfortunately, Morro Bay hasn't always done this. We have let our streets get down below this point because of other funding priorities during the leaner years. And many of you heard my stories before. Our streets weren't really constructed as engineered streets. Especially in the north end of town, a lot of them were red rock roads that got oiled on top of, and then chip sealed, and then an overlay on top of that. So modern street construction would have us dig that out, lay down a course of base material, you know, maybe 6, 8, 12 inches, depending on the underlying soil, compact that. We might have to add lime or cement to the underlying soil to make it stable enough to support the street, and then do, you know, 3 to 4 inches of asphalt paving on top of that. That's the way you build a street. That's the way I like to build streets. We don't always do it that way, and we can't, with the resources that are available, we couldn't reconstruct all of our streets that way all at one time. This is another slide that kind of says the same thing in a little bit different way. So if you're up in this area up in here, you know, it's $4 a square yard for slurrying and keeping that street in that good condition. You get down to here, jumps up to $25 a square yard for an overlay. Mill and fill, where you're grinding the surface and then doing an overlay on top of that, $30 a yard. And then reconstruction for those failed streets averages about $87 a square yard. So, you know, a factor of 20 between these two. And the goal would be to get up to this level and to maintain our streets at that level. But it's going to take us a while to get there. Another graph to show kind of the same thing. What this is trying to show is the maintenance cycle that you would continue to do rather than dropping below that line there that would trigger higher levels of maintenance. So I'm not going to belabor these curves anymore. You know, us engineers like graphs and charts. So we have done quite a bit of street work between 2011 and 2015, $4.1 million we've done. We've repaired 17 miles or 32% of our streets. We've increased our pavement condition index from 63 to 66, but we still have 5% of our streets with really no pavement life left in them. And we've reconstructed segments of Kings, Panorama, Andros, and South Bay Boulevard. South Bay Boulevard was done with the help of about $300,000 in regional money from our funding partners at SLOCOG, because it has a bigger, it's more than just Morro Bay residents using South Bay Boulevard. So they saw it more as a regional street, and they added some funding onto that. Were you going to take over at this point, or did you want me to? Okay. Rick's going to, we're going to tag team a little bit here, and Rick's going to take over here. You'll hear from me a little bit later, but you'll hear a couple other voices here. Rick Sauerwein, our capital projects manager, and Jared Whalen, our associate engineer in our department that does the day-to-day management of these types of projects.
Good evening, folks. A couple of the improvements that we've already begun and want to continue as we move forward with the program are first of all established in geographical project areas. That came up in our very first street summit, and now that we've implemented some of our new Street Saver software, we've actually been in a position to implement that. We've also had great success in using rubberized chip in binders to improve the wear and the durability of our pavements and to help bridge some of the pesky alligator cracking that you see in many places throughout the city. Starting in 2012, we implemented something new called a triple layer improvement, where we actually come into a street that's in really bad condition and apply a leveling course first, and then two layers of chip seal over the top of that, and then we slurry over the top of the entire production. That also not only improves the wearability and gives us a better cross-section and eliminates a lot of deformities, but it also allows us to build a little bit of a structural section to help withstand some of the heavier truck loading. We've done some lime cement stabilization, very notably down at South Bay Boulevard and at Andros. A lot of our streets in the beach track are underlined by very soft clays, and the only way that we can stabilize that base is to come in and treat the clay with lime and cement to establish a firm base and then go ahead and pave over that. Something that we haven't had the opportunity to do, but we think can add a lot of value to the streets that really need major reconstruction, is a process called cold-in-place recycling, where you come through in a paving train and you first mill the existing surface off, and then that existing aggregate is mixed on site and then replaced as you go and then rolled into place. So it saves a lot of truck traffic, which I think is a benefit to everybody and really simplifies the construction process and gives the resident quicker access. We haven't tried that yet because you need some longer stretches of roadway, and in order to do this, it's probably one of the more expensive processes that we'll get into, and so we need a very significant amount of funding to move forward with a project like this. We have completed our transition to Street Saver. After our street summit with the Public Works Advisory Board in June, we found that the 20% of inspections that we had done on streets that had some obvious errors in the pavement condition really was yielding some peculiar results in the computer. And so as we investigated that further, we did a peer review with one of the local engineering firms that has done a lot of work with Street Saver and has also assisted several other cities in the area, most notably Grover Beach, in assessing their roadways. And what we found was that because we did 100% inspection of each street and entered that into the system typically is only looking for a representative sample. And so it skewed our results in a much more negative fashion than we anticipated. And so when we talked to the PWAB in June, we told them we thought our pavement condition index had dropped to 56, when in reality it's gone up to 66. So we've seen a 3-point increase over that 4-year investment that we've made in our streets. So that's very encouraging, but as we get into some other slides here, you'll see we've still got a long way to go. So all of the streets now have been inspected. We did 100% inspection of everything. All of our renovated streets were reevaluated. We went through and we looked at the decision tree. We updated costs based on our last bid costs, and then we compared those with costs that they're getting for work that's being done right now in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And we're still in the process of working out the bugs. But the real value with Street Saver is that it allows us to run different scenarios to see where we can get the best value. We're still evaluating some of our decision factors, and that's a process that will be continuous all the time. And we're looking at various ways of assessing the effectiveness of some of these alternative repairs that we've done. We've got about a four-year track record, but we'd really like to see an 8 or 10 year track record before we're really confident in applying this across the board. I also spent a week back in Minnesota at the Public Works annual conference talking with a number of different vendors about different kinds of treatment technologies that we might apply. And we're going to do the best we can to implement some of those technologies. So anyway, the short and the long of it is after the 100% inspection, you can see that our pavement condition index across the entire city has gone up those 3 points to 66. We're running about 75 on our minor arterials, which is a good thing because they get most of the traffic and everybody uses those. Our collectors get a little bit less traffic, but again, they're very important to our residential street network, and that's up around a 67 now. But our local and residential streets still need some improvement. They're at a 63. The rural local streets are just, there's a two of them is all we're dealing with, but they're lagging behind at a 48. So here's a map of our current PCI, and it kind of gives you an overall perspective of where we're at. And I know that that's pretty small, but let me see if I can't blow it up a little bit for you, and we'll... Hold on here.
There we go. Are all the streets in your PCI?
Jim, could you come up? If you have a question, could you come up to the microphone so we can get it on? Thank you.
Hi. Looking at the overhead there, I couldn't quite tell if all the streets are in the PCI. In other words, the PCI, that's your rating for the street. And so when you're running your computer program, do you have all the streets in there?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So every street in Morro Bay is in that. So your results reflect the poor streets as well as the better streets.
That's correct.
Okay.
And now that we've zoomed in, we can see graphically the condition, with green being in the best condition and red being in the worst. And I don't know how many of you who were here 3 years ago. I think where we're zoomed into was 100%, well, not 100%, but almost 100% red. And the folks from North Morro Bay wanted red zone T-shirts printed up because we were focusing our work quite a bit on what the results of the computer model said, which said, you know, work on the better streets first, which focused our work in the south end of town rather than the north end of town.
Right, and as you can see, there's still some work to be done in zones 1 and 2, which are North Morro Bay and Central Morro Bay. But we've made some significant progress along the way. Let me show you South Morro Bay as well. We're doing real well in the Central Business District in South Morro Bay, but there are still a couple of areas that can use some improvement. One of the biggest streets in need is a very heavily used collector, Piney Way, and I'm sure a lot of people use that cutting through to the state park and the golf course on a regular basis. And so we're going to try a couple of innovative approaches to tackle that problem, knowing that we don't have the resources to rebuild it like we'd like to.
And the difference, you saw the color difference between South and North Morro Bay. That is not only because of the work that we did, but it's because of the underlying soils. Soil in the south end of town is much more granular, less fine grain, less clays, support streets better than the clay material once you get north of Morro Creek. Really poor soils once you get up into that area. My first kind of street repair job that I went out on, you know, the streets maintenance supervisor invited me to see a job down on the beach tract. And I assumed once they dug the street away, it was going to be sand because it's called the beach tract. And it was the bluest, stickiest clay that I've ever seen underneath that street. And I think as they were using the backhoe to pull away the existing asphalt, as that backhoe rocked on its outriggers, it was destroying more street than they are actually trying to fix. So that's the problem with poor underlying soils. They need to be stabilized first.
And that's a good example of why we're trying some more innovative methods. One of the streets that we did 2 years ago was Andros, and we ran into that very same condition. It was pumping very badly, and there was standing water after we pulled the pavement off. And so by using the lime and the cement to stabilize things, it dried up the water and stabilized that soil so that we could get a good solid layer of asphalt over the top of it. I mentioned that we have implemented the geographic areas, and here's how they're set up right now. The thing that's nice about Street Saver is that it allows me, as I go through and set up projects, to allocate resources on a percentage basis based on where I see discrepancies in the overall PCI. So, you know, what I've seen now is that zones 1 and 2 still need some more attention, and so we're going to be devoting a greater percentage of our resources to those two zones until we see the PCI balance out there. And there's not a big difference between zones 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, but there is a slight difference, and we'll be able to monitor that year by year as we make our investment. Okay. What we also found is that if we look at our unconstrained needs here in this... As we look at our unconstrained need, is, in other words, if we had all the money in the world, how much would it cost us to fix our streets to a perfect condition? We find that if we start off this year with that current PCI of a 66, Street Saver would suggest that we invest $360,000 in preventive maintenance, which is slurry seals and crack sealing, and $8 million in rehab. And that would take us up to a PCI of 79 throughout the city, Be very good road condition, no doubt about it. You can step through that whole process for all those subsequent years, but the real message here is that after 20 years, what you see is a total cost of about $38 million, and that keeps us at that between 79 and 80 until we get to the out years and we drop off a little bit to 77, but still very good roads. That's about $1.9 million a year if you average it over the whole 20-year period. We're budgeting about 25% of that maintenance and repair requirement right now. So you can see why we would have a problem. Here's our current scenario. If you look at the light green numbers, that represents the $500,000 a year that we have to spend right now. And you see it trends us on a track to a PCI of 37 in 20 years, which is not a place that any of us want to be. It also takes us to, going up the right-hand side, a deferred maintenance backlog of $53 million, something that is a really ugly picture. So what we have shown you in the blue line is if Measure Q were to pass, Measure Q was continued to be invested on an annual basis, and Measure J passed, we'd have about $1 million a year that we could invest. And while that improves the trend, it still really doesn't get us where we want to be. We end up with a $37 million deferred maintenance backlog. What we find here is that it takes about $1.5 million, or thereabouts, to get us on a more acceptable trend. In this particular case, you can see our PCI continues at the level that it's at right now, 67, 69, 70, and then starts to trend downward because it's really not quite enough money to keep the streets in a nice condition. But we end up with a deferred maintenance down around $19 million, which is a more acceptable level.
You're losing me. It's hard to read the numbers for me.
Yeah.
And, even with your guide there.
So
I don't know where you're talking.
So this is basically just to show trends. We'll post this up to the website, so if people want to dig into the numbers, you can dig into them later. But what we're trying to show here is if all of our Measure Q, all of our Measure J, and had another funding source for a $1.5 million total of funding, we stay level and then start trending downward in PCI or street conditions. So this curve right here is constant with all the charts. So this is just showing what the existing funding does, and this is showing what additional funding could do.
We've talked about trying to invest through either a bond or some certificates of participation. What we see there is that if we were to make that initial investment of about $2.5 million a year for 3 years, we'd get our PCI up to about a 77, and that would be great. But then if we continue just in investing $500,000 a year, which is what we're continuing to spend, you see the trend pretty much parallels our existing expenditures. So we make some initial improvements. That helps extend the condition of the roads for a little bit longer, but it still ultimately doesn't get us where we need to be. Here we look at doing that investment in our certificate of participation with $2.5 million a year for the first 3 years, and then spending $1.5 million annually thereafter. And you can see that that gets us to a deferred maintenance of about $17 million after 20 years. And a PCI of about 62. More acceptable, and I think it clearly demonstrates that that 1.5 level of investment is about where we need to be. Then we did a scenario of, well, what do we have to do to get to a target of 70 every year for the next 20 years? And that takes about a $33 million investment over the 20 years, or $1.68 million. That represents about $168 per resident each year in your roads, which at first blush seems like a lot of money. But when you think about it in terms of, you know, how often are you using the roads and how important are they to everything that we do here in town, it really is only about $14 a month for each individual.
That's resident or resident? Per person or per house?
Per person. Yes, per resident. So it's, you know, divided by about 10,000.
Does that work out about $300 per home?
Well, it depends on the, you know, how many people you've got in each home. Some will be higher, some would be lower.
So probably pretty close to that.
Yeah. That's about right.
So the state and the federal government is not going to participate in any way in any of our roads. So you're saying the citizens here have to pay for that.
Okay. So the question was, the state and federal government are not going to participate in local road funding. Based on past performance, I don't see that happening. The federal transportation bill does a good job of funding maintenance on interstate freeways, highways. Local streets are probably going to be left for the locals to maintain. The California State Legislature and the Governor's Office have been talking about a funding measure for California streets for a couple of years. The Governor called a special session last year to talk about street funding, and the Legislature and the Governor's Office were never able to come to any resolution on a funding bill for the streets. So we do see our local gas taxes come back to us. So about $200,000 a year we get in gas tax revenue. So the gas tax, it's our share based on population that comes back to us. And what that funds is some of the things that I talked about earlier, the kind of the routine maintenance, the pothole patching, the storm drain maintenance, the tree maintenance. So the staff that does that work, the supplies, the pile of asphalt, cold mix down at the yard that we use in the wintertime. So that's what funds that basic maintenance need. This deferred maintenance costs, that's one of the reasons why the county is looking towards this Measure J that we've talked about, and we'll talk a little bit more. And if we have more questions, we have an expert on Measure J in the audience. John DiNunzio is here from SLOCOG that can help us answer questions if need be.
I just had a quick question on the $1.68 million a year. Is that making the assumption Measure J does pass?
Again, that's based on the need.
So that's
what it would cost us to maintain our roads at 70.
So that would include PCI. The Measure J money, the Measure Q monies?
Well, we would certainly hope so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're not suggesting where that money's coming from.
Well, speaking of where we're at, around 10,000 residents, and you're showing
right.
that 168, but it seems to me it'd be less than that if you're getting the Measure J, the Measure Q.
Exactly.
Oh, but okay.
Those residents are contributing to both of those funds.
Right, but I mean it's not an additional $168. Because I think the way most people read this is you're saying an assessment of $168 in addition to Measure Q, in addition to Measure J.
Unless
I'm wrong.
No, you're right, Steve. So that is kind of confusing with that. I'm glad you brought that up. So if we were to subtract off the approximately $500,000 a year that we have with Measure Q, that brings it down to $1.18 million or $118 per resident. Should Measure J pass, that would add another about $600,000 a year and would reduce it by another $60 per resident. So now we're talking in the neighborhood of $70. It's kind of risky to do math in my head in public, but I've given it a shot there. Before we put these slides up on the web, we'll make sure that we clarify that point. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that.
Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Jared now to talk a little bit about the work coming up in this coming year.
And what we'll do is there's some acronyms and abbreviations on that chart that we passed out. We'll hopefully explain what each one of those means. And give a little description of what that is in addition to what the acronym is. So maybe we could go through that first, and so everybody has a basics of what SL and DSS and the other acronyms are.
Okay. Good evening. So if everybody had the handout, we'll take a look. You can basically see that we have our street names in the beginning and ending locations, the approximate areas. The PCI is what we have just recently achieved in Morro Bay through our evaluation. So those are actually current, or at least a week old. The treatments next time you'll see the SL is for a slurry seal, and the 3CS is for what we call a triple cape seal or a triple layer. That's the slurry followed by a chip followed by another layer of slurry that Rick mentioned earlier about giving additional structural depth. We have the standard cape seal, which is just our chip with the slurry. Those are very beneficial in a lot of our residential streets. We also have here now what we're calling a DCS, that is a double chip seal. It is basically two chip seals followed by a slurry. Again, that's just to kind of give us some additional larger aggregate for a structural strength of the street. Some of the acronyms here also you'll see is REC, and that's actually kind of a new preventative maintenance or preservation ceiling that we're looking at called Reclamite. And the other one is CRF, and that is another rejuvenation seal that we are going to be looking into here very soon with some contractors coming into Morro Bay to take a look at our streets. So as you can see from the slide, this year we have about $986,000 allocated for our streets. This is the past 2 years budget. A few years ago, we made the decision to have a street project every 2 years. Therefore, getting a contractor in on one mobilization to do a volume of work, basically it's a better way to stretch our dollar. In some of the other ways that we've talked about with the slurry seals, we are actually looking into some other innovative treatments. And we're not just talking about slurries on chips or the combination of two. We're looking at this Reclamite, which is basically a sealing emulsion and resin that's kind of in a scientific way is just to say to help balance the chemistry of an oxidized pavement. The other one, the CRF, is a restorative seal. It's also a rejuvenating seal. Again, a lot of these are to preserve the poor streets to buy us more time. As Rick mentioned, the funds have been allocated based on the geographical area and the PCI. We've also made the conscious decision to really look at where the money's going in those zones so that we can best, you might say, have a fair balance along the city. And as Rob mentioned before, there's that imaginary line where we have this, you know, decent, great soil to a very poor soil. And so when we say geographical area, that really takes on multiple meanings. Now, every year we've been putting in the city budget a five-year plan. And we have been listing streets that will be coming up in the future for a treatment. We wanted to stress that the, you know, these five-year plans can change. You know, streets do not deteriorate along a straight line graph. There's lots of outstanding factors that can actually destroy a street faster than others. We have daily traffic counts, drainage, and then just overall use. So the five-year budget plan for streets is a living, breathing document that will change. We don't expect drastic changes, but you can see streets kind of fluctuate on and off that list that will get a treatment in a specific fiscal year. One of the things that we want to establish in Public Works is this IDIQ. It is basically, it's an acronym for an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity. In short, it's a delivery order. It allows us to have on contract one contractor for multiple years. This saves us both time and money. Per the public contract code, we have to go out to bidding on projects that exceed a certain dollar amount. That takes up to 2 to 4 weeks on a proper bidding process. In addition, the fees that go into having such a long bid time, it just grows more and more. So by putting together a delivery order, we're able to keep a contractor on hand, and when the funds become available and we can really get a true value for our dollar, we can quickly execute a delivery order and get him into Morro Bay quickly. So the question was, does that include negotiated prices? The IDIQ contract is structured so that we get a price per unit bid. So we will put in there per the square foot, per the ton. That being said, we've also added a little extra that basically states that the contractor can negotiate that fee based on, say, current petroleum prices, current labor prices. As a municipality, we are beholden to the public contract code, which says prevailing wage. And that prevailing wage changes or can change up to every 6 months. And so if we don't do a project for more than a year, the wages for laborers, rakers, and asphalt pavers can change anywhere from $1 to $3 an hour. And so by that, we do allow a sit down and negotiate the cost. And those are all based off open book prices.
The short answer, though, is this contract is competitively bid. It's not negotiated. And so we will come up with unit quantities. We're meeting with 8 different contractors in the next 2 days to do site walks with them and to value engineer the bid list that we're putting together for this particular project, and then each contractor will give us their best competitive price and will award to the low bidder. Those adjustments that Jared talked about are in subsequent out years based on fluctuations and changes in the costs of the materials and the labor rates.
And then just to add further review to that, those additional orders are also required to be approved by City Council. So each year we would be bringing in a, let's say, a six-year delivery contract, a contract revision to Council that would award that next year's contract. So how this is really saving money in my mind, how it works, is it's a promise of future work. So the contractor can lower their prices because they know that they may be getting 6 years worth of work, so they're looking at to keep their prices down and stay on for that full six-year contract.
Yeah, and it's a means for a small community like Morro Bay to attract large, high-quality contractors to come do work with us. If we were to go out every year with a $500,000 contract, we wouldn't get very competitive prices. We wouldn't get the best contractors in the world. But this has attracted a lot of interest from a lot of some of the best contractors in the state. So we're real pleased. Yes, sir.
So the question was, as we looked at joint venturing, the public works directors get together on a quarterly basis, and we've talked about that a bunch of times. Just we can't seem to align our contracts or our budgets together. I know it has worked in other areas. In the state of Washington, I worked for Clark County, Washington, and we used to bid out for the small cities in our area and get them good prices. No one city is willing to take the lead on that. And up until last night, the city's municipal code didn't allow us to piggyback on other people's bid. So we changed our muni code to allow piggybacking onto other competitively bid contracts. We'll do a second reading next council meeting. It'll go into effect 30 days later that will allow that. And we'll continue to work as public works directors together to see if we can get our timing set up so that we can work together. There's a bit of a competition. You know, everybody wants the best price on bids. Timing-wise, I've never found what the optimal time of year is for that. You know, I used to think it's, you know, be the first one out in the springtime, you'll get the best prices. That hasn't always worked. Be the last one in the fall, everybody's hungry for their last project. Nope, I'm not sure what the magic is, other than if we could get all of us in one room, agree when we're going to put a project out to bid and do it, we might get a better price for a larger project. The county in this area does things a little bit differently for their projects. They actually, the county section of the government code allows counties to do this. They buy oil, they rent the truck, they contract for labor all individually and supplement with their own forces. But the cities are not, the California law does not allow cities to perform that exact same way. But it's a great idea, and we should continue to pursue that.
Can I get a question in?
Sure, Jim.
Just a couple. But one is, I see you have no PCI number for about 30 addresses down there at the bottom of the sheet.
That's correct. We didn't get a chance to get those put in today. The list has been changing as we've worked through it.
So that'll get into
that. And we'll go ahead and add that tomorrow.
Analog
system. We just
didn't
have a chance, yeah.
Okay. The other is, I'm going to throw you one. You know, the paradigm has been by the city, I guess ever since it been incorporated, that pave the best streets first. And as a consequence, we're in the problem we are, because there's so many streets that didn't get paved because they didn't get budgeted for and so on. But before I go on with that, I want to mention that my street doesn't get swept, okay? They stop sweeping it because they say, well, it screws up the machine because the street's breaking up, the potholes and everything. Well, I say, oh, but then on the diagram here, you've got a green, you got nutmeg is all green. You know, that's top of the grade. Something's wrong. I can't get my street swept, but yet I've got the best street. So which one's right? I don't know. How do I get my street swept?
So street sweeping is per our minimum requirements for our stormwater permit. So residential streets get swept once per year, residential local streets.
That's all the city? Or are you sweeping more streets or other streets more often?
So if they are a collector classification like Ironwood or Beachcomber or Main Street, Morro Bay Boulevard, those get swept twice a month.
Well, our streets, you know, we can't wash down anything. So the street, the dirt gets built up and the trash in the gutters. And we're supposed to live with that just because of, I don't know why you give this other priority.
So the priority is set up by our stormwater permit. Because the collector streets have more traffic on them, they get dirtier quicker. The other factor is cost. We have a contract. We don't have our own street sweeper. We couldn't afford our own street sweeper or street sweeper labor. So we have a contract for about $67,000 a year to do street sweeping. And that's what we have the budget that was allocated for. And the level of service is predicated on those budget dollars that are available.
Well, I haven't seen a street sweeper around, and I haven't seen anybody fixing any potholes. So I have questions on both those budgets and how it's allocated. But I guess that brings me to the proposal that I'm going to suggest. You take all your big money you got, you know, for this year, and you go around and you fix every pothole to, you know, grade so that the street sweeper isn't going to knock out that patch. And then once you get the whole city squared away on potholes so those that need sweeping can be swept, then you start reconstructing. And I say you do the worst streets first, because if you keep going with the best streets first, we're never going to get there. And I think that the people that live in those areas that have lived with it for 40 or 60 years, I don't know, ever since the city's been going, deserve better than that. I think you should not discriminate against certain residents because you think that all the best streets should go first. Look, if it's the best street, don't do a thing to it. Just sweep it or clean it. But let's start making more streets livable. So that's my suggestion, but I'd sure like a response on worst streets first.
So
thank you.
The balance is we need to maintain the pavement that we have while spending some of the money that we have on fixing the worst street. So in one of the earlier slides, we were suggesting a 70-30 percentage split. So we'd spent 70% of the dollars on pavement preservation, which is pretty much the industry standard on how you maintain your streets, and spent 30% of the funding on fixing those worst streets. And eventually, every street will be touched. But as Rick pointed out, unless more resources can be added to...
go to the general fund. It should be in the general fund in the first place. and why we've taken it out. There's a lot of things that should be in that general fund if they made special funds. And I think that's bad too, because you don't want to spend money on roads, so you take it out of the general fund. Well, that's not fair either. So I think that that's something that should be looked at.
Okay. Thank you.
And one of the things that we are doing this year that's a bit different is that we've recognized that waiting for the funding for the perfect solution is a lose-lose situation for everybody, because it's very difficult to come up with enough resources to do that. So what we're doing this year is trying to come up with some improvement to those poor streets. It's not going to be the perfect solution, and I will guarantee you that it won't last 20 years, but we're hoping that with some of these new techniques, we'll get another 8 to 10 years of service out of some of these really poor streets.
Getting back to the slides, since around 2012, the City of Morro Bay has applied for and has actually received grant money from the CalRecycle program. This is where they basically grind down and chop up old used car tires, mix it in with the emulsion, and what you get is a rubberized product. And this is a lot of what we've been using on our streets. Just to kind of give you a little background on how much we've been using this CalRecycle grant, just since 2012, we put in almost 400,000 square feet of chip seal using the rubberized emulsion. In 13, over 650,000. And in 2014-15, over 220,000 square feet. Most of these would equate to basically upwards of almost 4,000 car tires that we've taken out of landfills and now are being used on our streets. This, again, kind of goes back to the stretch the limits of the innovative treatments, where hopefully in the future we'll be able to look into the rubberized pavement recycle grant, which is basically the same process of using the rubberized emulsion with chip seal, but rather it's mixed in with the aggregates and the emulsion and actually hot mix asphalt. So it's actually in the road itself. Go ahead. These are a list of streets and their potential treatments. Again, we just want to reiterate that we haven't gone out to competitive bid yet, so these streets right now are on this list, but are beholden to the prices we get on our bid. You can see we're using and utilizing the triple-layer Cape Seal, the mill and double chip, which is looking at potentially grinding and compact in place and then putting two layers of chip seal followed by a slurry. Again, it's just to extend the service life of the road for another 5 years so that we can build up reserves to come back in the future and build them right. Some of our other standard treatments that we have been using in the past are slurry seals, and then looking at some of these rejuvenating seals or these penetrating seals. Again, this is just to kind of put the oils and some of the smaller fines back inside the streets where that top layer has come off, and it's starting the process of unraveling. And before it gets to that point, within the next couple of years, we can stop it by putting on these sealing treatments. Some of the other things that we wanted to bring up tonight is the pavement alterations that trigger ADA, or the Americans with Disability Act. The list you see up there It can get a little confusing, but basically the Department of Justice has come down and stated that all of the treatments that you use that are listed on the left-hand side of the chart, from crack feeling all the way down to pavement patching, is really considered a maintenance. And when you're doing maintenance, that's all you're doing is just maintenance. However, they also classify those on the right as alterations or basically rehabilitations. So from the open graded surface course down to new construction, that will trigger what they're calling the ADA alteration, which states that if we do those particular methods and we are adjoining an intersection or a street that has a curb ramp, then that curb ramp has to be brought up to the current ADA code. This is important to stress because along with the price that we're paying for the pavement, we now have to get a contractor in here that specializes in concrete and starts doing concrete work. So again, we're looking at prevailing wages for concrete finishers and the new bill that went in that state now that concrete drivers, the truck drivers, are actually now getting paid prevailing wage. So years ago, we were putting in handicap ramps or curb ramps for right around $2,200 to $2,400 each. And now today, that price has escalated from anywhere from $4,500 to $5,500 each. So it's not getting any cheaper. And we have to be mindful of that when we pick and choose our streets, that we're going to have to start drawing money away from the pavement and start putting it on the walkways. With that being said, we have been getting some reimbursements or some help, actually, from the Community Development Block Grant Funds. This has been a very successful program with SLOCOG and through the county. And again, we utilize the IDIQ contractor, the indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, with one of our local contractors here. And we've been working with them now for almost 3.5-4 years. In that time, we have put in over $357,000 in gap closures. This is where we had sidewalk on either side, but there was nothing in the middle, and so we just filled it in. Some of those things, some of those areas in town were just natural soil for 50, 60 years. They've never been touched, and now there's actually a clear walking path within the business district. By utilizing some of those grants, we've managed to put down over 13,000 square feet of concrete. We've updated six ADA ramps and have managed to redo almost 2,000 lineal feet of curb and gutter. So it's been very successful. And it's something that we're proud of. There we go. So that's it.
So now I'm going to talk a little bit about funding, potential for funding future street work. Right now there's a ballot measure, Measure J, going on to the November ballot that will bring money to the county and to Morro Bay, and the mayor's holding up a flyer on that. If people want to pick that up to give some information, I bet John dropped those off here for us to look at. In Morro Bay, it will add about $600,000 a year to our street maintenance funding. It will also add $1 million to a major project for the SR1 Main Street and 41 improvements. And then it will also add funding to the Morro Bay Cayucas bike path. One of the issues is that, the longer, as Jared alluded to, the longer we wait, the more it costs. Prices continue to go up. One of the other options is to borrow or with our constant Measure Q revenue for a larger project, and then to use the Measure J funds to do a more annual basis. Next slide. Why has funding dropped in the kind of the streets world? We've seen VMT or vehicle miles travel go up. There's a red dot there somewhere. And gasoline and the resultant gas tax payments go down. So this is due to cars with a better mileage, electric vehicles, hybrid cars. So there is a revenue loss due to fuel efficiency or no fuel. The cost to the community for this Measure J is approximately $44 a year, $3.66 a month, 84 cents a week, or 12 cents a day. These slides come out of a SLOCOG presentation. Return on investment, so for every $1 spent, we get a $5 return in investment. That's because many folks from outside the community are also helping us pay sales tax. So our visitors are helping us pay sales tax. And John's going to come up and correct anything that I got wrong in that little factual presentation on Measure J. Or you can look towards the brochure in the back to give more information. Other funding options, we talked about Measure J, things that we could do locally. We could dedicate some of our, these all take our council action and through the budgeting process. Dedicate some of our emergency reserve to working on our streets. We could dedicate additional general fund revenue to streets, but in lieu of what? What are we not going to do to maintain our streets? So we balanced our budget this year, which means everything is funded. So the community has to make choices. What don't we fund to fund our streets? Sometimes at the end of the year, we may have money left over that generally goes into our reserves. We could set that aside and use it for streets. We've done that in the past. So excess revenue over expenses. I think 4 years ago we did that and dedicated that to streets. Citywide parcel tax. We could tax ourselves for paying for street improvements. Something that is done elsewhere in the county is neighborhood street improvement districts. So in Cambria, for example, they're block by block. So the neighbors get together and vote in an assessment district for their block, and they fund those street improvements. And then one thing that we talked about earlier was cooperative purchasing agreements with other agencies. It's not really another funding source. It's just a way to stretch our existing dollars and to help them work further for us. And what else do we spend our street dollars on? Maybe not on Jim Street, but we do street sweeping around the community. Typically in our downtown business district, it's once a week. On our residential, arterial, and collector streets, it's twice a month. And then our local streets, it's once per year. We do storm drain maintenance. Although that's going to be moving to our utilities division in the future, but it'll still require general fund money to do storm drain maintenance. Currently, it's a bit of reactive maintenance. When a storm drain system fails, we fix it because we have a storm drain system in the ground that is corrugated metal pipe for the most part, that has been in the ground for 40 to 60 years. There's a chunk of it up on between Ironwood and Juniper at about 2,400, 2,500 block that we'll be working on this year. It goes down in between a couple of houses, but it's a community, it's a citywide storm drain system. I guess I could say, luckily, we don't have much underground pipe in Morro Bay. We use our streets for the majority of our storm drain system, and then once it gets closer to the bay, does it go into piping system. We maintain our striping, our center line stripes, bike lanes, crosswalks, stop bars, and legends. In fact, our crew is out today counting all those in our candidate streets so that we could have a bid quantity that we could put on bid forms. Pedestrian and bicycle facilities are class one through class, well, class one and class two. Class three bike facilities are streets that everybody else uses. But class two facilities, we have that bike, white bike lane stripe. Class one facilities are the detached, separated bike paths, like the one going through the cloisters, through the high school, the Harbor Walk project. Those are class one facilities with a separated pedestrian path. We do street tree maintenance. excuse me. Basically, we trim our trees, not for beauty, but for safety reasons is the main purpose that we trim our trees. Some of the other innovative or recent things we've done is traffic calming. We've done a couple of small projects, and we'll have another project coming up. So the striping at Pacific and Main, because it didn't meet stop sign, the justification to put a stop sign, we tried bulbing it out with paint to see if that would slow down traffic. We'll probably add a radar feedback sign there next year to give the driver feedback to how fast they're driving as they get into that 25-mile-an-hour speed from 30 miles an hour as they're coming north on Main Street. That ends the main part of the presentation, and we're happy to have people come up with questions. We do have some more detailed slides on bikes, pedestrian facilities, traffic calming. If there's questions on that we can use to guide that discussion. Thank you, and Mr. Davis. So I think we're having somebody come out to help us with that.
That's on San Jacinto looking west to Highway 1 across Main Street. Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee's top project is to provide a safe route to school on San Jacinto east of Highway 1. And what we need is to provide a safe way for westbound bicyclists on San Jacinto to approach Main Street from Alder and to cross Highway 1 without riding illegally against traffic or on the sidewalk. The bike lane on San Jacinto ends right here where the photographer is standing at Alder. And you can see there's no designated route for bicyclists to proceed to the intersection, and there's no safe way here to cross San Jacinto to get to the other side. So we have general agreement, I think, that the simplest, cheapest, and most effective solution is to paint green bike lanes on both sides of San Jacinto from Cedar to Main. So that would be a green bike lane from the point of where the photographer is standing to the crosswalk at the stop sign. And to convert that right turn pocket to a protected bike lane with a bike box so that children or adults on bicycles can ride from here to the crosswalk, and then paint the crosswalk green over to the other side, and then paint the crosswalk across Main Street Green to Highway 1. That provides a clear, visible path for children on bicyclists, and it tells motorists where they should expect to see bicyclists. A few weeks ago, I think you received bids to paint these bike lanes, but the lowest bid was for $36,000, and you had $25,000 allocated. Since then, Mr. Buckingham told the bike committee that the council had budgeted an additional $15,000 and asked the bike committee what project we would like to fund with that. And we would like to add that to the $25,000 that was already allocated so that you could complete this project. So is there any possibility that we could do that?
Definitely. So we've added this painting striping project to our IDIQ bid that we're going out with, hoping that we don't have to spend the full $15,000 on it because it's part of going to be part of a bigger project. So we've added that to our current bid, and we'll be getting bids on that. So it will get done, and we're just hoping not to have to spend the full additional $15,000 on this, and we can spend it on maybe another location near the school.
Okay, so, but this project will get done then?
Yes, it will.
Cool, thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Rita. I've heard the term the safe route to schools. Is there any funding attached to that or just requirements that you have to meet? I have a question because I've heard the term.
There is a portion of what is now called the Active Transportation Act that provides funding for safe routes to schools. The city has investigated those grant opportunities in the past, and unfortunately we haven't been competitive with other communities for those funds. We were hoping to get about $1.3 million for a redo of Greenwood.
That was my concern, since you have to go halfway into the street to get around that one section that's on the list. But is this list in order of projects you're going to do?
It's not in order. It's a list of potential projects that we're going to work with the contractors on over the next 2 days to try to value engineer and find the most cost-effective way to get as many of these streets done as possible. I would tell you that not all of these streets will get done. This list represents about $1.4 million worth of work, and we only have a budget of 9.8. I think what we'll probably end up doing is reducing that total cost probably on the order of maybe $100,000 or maybe even $200,000. It gets it a little bit closer to where we need to be. And so whatever we've got in excess, we'll probably put in an optional bid item so that we could award at a later date when additional funding is available.
Yeah, I understand the logic behind your 70 and 30 split that is – for so many students to have to go really into the middle of the street there, that one section, it's a liability to the city. It really is. I mean, because I know you're aware of it. You know, there's been people that call in about it. Pico Street was not on your list at all, and in the 70-30 split, you want to fix some other streets or keep other streets, you know, from in disrepair. We live on the next street over, and we get a lot of traffic on our street because nobody wants to drive on Pico to get through to Elm, to the Ocean View Manors and stuff. So Pico should be added to your list. And I don't know why the computer model didn't come up with it, because it's a mess. It's one of the, it's almost as bad as Greenwood. And the other in-house item, and I should just do the email to the city, along Main Street by Fleece Works, there's the past Hill Street, between Hill Street and where the sidewalk starts at Lucky Gas Station, or right before, there's a real lip of blacktop. In-house, grind it down, and you'll save yourself some liability. I saw a little, it was the day of the bike parade, July 4th, there was a little family going down the sidewalk because they had little tiny kids, so they weren't using the bike lanes because they're really narrow there. And the little boy, he hit that and he went down. It's the blacktop sticks up. There's dirt and then maybe sidewalk, and there's some blacktop right there. It's about a...
Is that on Main?
On Main Street, okay. Yes. Yeah, right about that Fleece Works wool place, whatever, you know, just before the sidewalk starts. Or as Shel Silverstein would be, where the sidewalk ends. So close to that. So, but in-house, that would, I just thought of some levity here.
Yeah.
you guys get beat up all the time. Just grinding it down would be a significant advantage. A lot of high school kids walk through there. I mean, obviously, that's where they have to go to school from North Morro Bay. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you. And brought up a good point. So we have a couple of ways to get information to the city for service requests, and it works really good because it goes directly to the guys that do the work rather than going through the city manager to me, to the supervisor, to the guys that do the work. So it's on our website. It's called the service request module, and you can pick from a bunch of different categories, street repairs. Doesn't work? Okay.
We got your request. Not that we're going to do it, but yes, we got it.
We do need to go through our categories because some of them, you might think that that's the one to pick. Like, I can't think of one. There was one that building services or something like that that doesn't go to anyone. But if you were to pick maintenance request, it goes right to the maintenance crew that does that work. So... but anyway, I've seen it work because I keep the app on my phone, and My Morro Bay is what it's called. Yeah, you bring it up, you can take a shot, take a picture of the problem, and pick the request type. And maybe it's because I know which request types not to do, but we're refining that list. Enough said about that. But it does generally get to the right person. I'm going to go through that list and make sure there's no old ones that are hanging out there. That
actually, what happened was I saw a guy filling potholes. I dragged him over and said, "You got a 12-inch pothole here in Greenwood. Do you want to fill it?" And that was so.
That might be the best way to get. Okay.
Well, that was a different one.
Okay. But I encourage everybody to use it. We're, trying to get the buds worked out of it. So it's service request module on the website or My Morro Bay at the Apple App Store and the Android, whatever store that is. And they're free apps. So you can put them on your Android or iDevice and use that. Or you can email me. It's just not quite as quick as that. My email address is, I've given it out before, rlivick, R-L-I-V-I-C-K, at morrobayca.gov, morrobayca.gov. What I'll do with your email is create a service request work order in the correct category, and you'll get a response back to your email when any activity takes place on that work order. So that would be another way to get it. If all else fails, you can also call us. Public Works phone number is 772-6261. You'll get to the city's phone tree. Bear with that. It's like everybody else's automated answering system. Just don't press zero because I don't think that does anything for it. Doesn't get you to an operator. But if you listen to the list, you can pick the right number to get to. And there's a way to get to the city's phone directory and punch in the first few letters or letters of the first or last name, and it'll put you to that person's line too. But those automated phone systems are frustrating, even for those that call in that work for the city too. Any further questions? Come on up, or don't come up, and I'll repeat the question too. That's another way to do it.
Do you have a rest?
excuse me? Oh, rest in peace for, we have a list of failed streets. We didn't bring that as part of the presentation, but I mean, everybody's favorite failed street is Ponderosa. I mean, that is horrible. It is very poor condition street, and we're going to try to do something this year to that street. We've worked on Panorama a couple years ago. That street we did some major work on to rebuild certain sections of that, but it's very expensive to reconstruct streets.
I guess what street, you know, you're just not going to waste money on until you can actually afford to do something for it.
No, we're not taking that. Would be if we just followed the precise computer model approach. We're not going to do that, though. We're dedicating 70% of the funding for the computer model type streets, 30% of the funding for those streets that are too bad to work on, but we're still going to work on them anyway, just to bridge that gap until additional funding becomes available. With the 30%, so it's going to take a long time to do.
Talking about digging up streets, a thought. You know Merle Bay's favorite tree?
The flowering yew?
No, telephone pole.
Okay.
But they're getting so thick, and the wires are getting thicker, and especially the cables, you know, they're adding cable, and they're building up the ones that are there. So the skyline isn't what it used to be. And so that's a big expense. You know, when are you going to dig up the streets and so on? Well, you don't want to dig up the streets right after you've paved it. So if there's any way that can be tied in together, where if you know you're going to be, you know, doing extensive work and expense on putting a street in, if you could consider what the possibilities might be for a neighborhood to go and put their wires underground. The other is, you know, these companies that have all these towers around town and they're putting in more. Right now they have them on certain telephone poles, and also they're putting them on the right-of-ways, like driving up Morro Bay Boulevard, just before South Street. There's one in the right-of-way that they've just put in, and it's a stringy big cabinet, and then it goes up, and it either runs to the pole with an antenna, or they put one up. Well, they're talking about all the providers of wireless systems doing that so they can cover the city. So are we going to have those all over the city? I mean, I can see our telephone poles and these things sticking up with all these utility boxes. Now, maybe those could be underground at the same time that you're paving a street, or maybe you can get the poles and those, whatever they have in those boxes, underground. And it'd make the skyscape much better. So, a thought.
Well, thank you, everybody, for coming out. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate that you're getting to some.
I'll follow up with you on street sweeping on Nutmeg and potholing, and we'll find out why it shows up as the best street in town.
Okay.
Thank you. But we'll follow up.
Hey, you covered it real well.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.